Today, my guest is an American professional free skier. In 2015, she was the first woman to win the Best Line Award at the Powder magazine. She was already a very accomplished ski racer at the age of 18, but eventually her enthusiasm for big mountain skiing got the best of her. And in this episode, we talk about the state of flow, facing your fears, and being a good role model. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest, Angel Collison. Angel, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Well, off the bat, I have to say that what you do is pretty badass, you know? I think it requires a certain level of human being to do what you do. Would you agree with me?
Well, thank you for your nice comments. I think that it requires a special person. I'm not sure. I think I've been doing it for so long that it's like, you know, the idea of spending, you know, 10,000 hours at something. I've been doing it since I was 2, so it feels natural to me. And it seems like to me, someone who is really, really good at the violin or like a musical instrument or math, like that to me seems impossible. So I think part of it is just the time spent, and especially starting when you're young, if that makes sense.
I don't know. I could be wrong, but I don't think there are a lot of little girls out there thinking that when they grow up, they want to be jumping out of a helicopter on the top of a mountain and skiing all the way down. I think that's not very common these days, but it definitely seems like you wire a little bit different than everybody else, which is great because we are all amazed by all the things that you guys do by pushing boundaries and your limitations.
Yeah, so I started skiing when I was 2, and then I started ski racing when I was 8, and ski raced until I was 18. And then, I went into big mountain skiing. But I think the biggest factor in me doing what I do today is probably that I spent most of my time outdoors with my family as a little girl. So I think I always had sort of tomboy inclinations, or at least just I always loved outdoor sports anyways. And I really love throwing sticks and rocks and running around and getting dirty. And I think sometimes our culture says that that is, you know, more what boys like to do, but it's more of a stereotype that we place on gender, that I think when you have all kids outside, like we all like to get dirty. We all like to run around. And yeah, I was more drawn to sports for sure. And I think part of that was just my upbringing.
How did your parents react when you told them that this is what you're going to be doing for a living?
They were really supportive because I was going to college. I was on an academic full ride scholarship and I had quit ski racing, decided to go to college. I started competing in big mountain competitions just for fun. And they were supportive of that. You know, it was just sort of a way that I would get me out of the library and keep skiing. And so I competed for 2 years just for fun, you know, on the big mountain tour, but ended up doing really, really well. But there was a defining moment when I decided to pursue big mountain skiing. And I remember sitting in my college house and I was going to summer school and I just had that thought, like, what if I don't sign up for college classes for fall semester? Like I was looking at the classes that I needed to take and I was like, what if I just don't sign up? And what if I fully pursue skiing? Because it was getting to the place where I was getting offered these sponsorships and I sort of had to pick either school or skiing. I was getting to the place where I couldn't do both. And the first people I called were my parents and they were super supportive and they were like, school is always going to be there, but these opportunities like skiing or whatever, these opportunities that come along that can pass you by, those should be taken advantage of.
That's great. That's very important that they were very supportive of you. But usually, I think majority of the parents would go, no, I just finish school and once you're done, you can do whatever you want. But it wasn't the case here.
Yeah. Yeah, they, my parents have always kind of thought outside of the box, I guess. And I feel so grateful isn't the word. I mean, it's been such a big part of what's made me who I am is the way that they think outside of the box. Like, you know, we grew up up at Snowbird Ski Resort, living in the employee housing and traveling out of our blue Ford van all summer and backpacking out of it. So it was always sort of a alternative lifestyle childhood, I guess. And they've always led the way in not always following the status quo and really figuring out what you want to do and going for it.
So once you decide to do Big Mountain, what's the big difference between the training or the preparation? I mean, of course, there's a lot more to it, but can you just kind of break it down a little bit for us?
Well, Big Mountain skiing is, it was interesting because coming from ski racing is very, very structured. It's very disciplined. It requires a lot of sacrifice. You spend your whole life and every hour of the day either exercising or working on your equipment, or, I mean, those are actually the two big ones. And, you know, once you make it to a higher level, then other people wax and tune your skis for you. But it's a full, like, 100% lifestyle choice to be a ski racer. And it is requires so much dedication. And when I switched over to Big Mountain skiing, it's like the opposite. no one has a coach in Big Mountain skiing. No one really has like a training protocol. No one sees a sports psychologist or a nutritionist. Like, it's kind of just a free for all. And it's really just a group of skiers that are really passionate and are good at it and have figured out a way to make a living from it one way or another. So I would say the biggest difference is the structure. There's not a lot of structure to like Big Mountain skiing in general. And once you're in the sport, or when you're talking about like the specifics of the skiing, they're also quite different. Ski racing is, you know, around gates, and a lot of time is spent doing drills, and all of your time, though, mostly is spent on the course. And with Big Mountain skiing, it's very much free form. Like, you look at a mountain and you kind of like, usually from the bottom, and you say, where do I want to go? And then it's just up to you to go wherever you want to go. If you want to jump off a cliff or hit a little natural windlip or go through this tree section, it's kind of whatever you want to do. So I really like that.
For those who are not familiar with Ski Mountain, tell us a little bit more about what are the rules, the categories, how does it work?
So there's like five different categories, or at least there were. I haven't competed in a while. And different competition circuits might be a little bit different. But in general, the most important category is your line choice, like how difficult is the line that you're about to ski, and does it include cliffs or a really steep section that's tight or narrow? So everything's kind of based around your line score. So the other factors, the other scores are control, fluidity, aggression, and style. And they all hinge around the line score. So their speed is not a component. But for example, you choose a really challenging line, and if you stop or if you're out of control, your other factors might go down. But because you picked a tough line, you might still be okay. Whereas if you pick an easy line and you ski it really, really well, all of your other factors can only be 2 points above your line score. So like, I didn't do the best job explaining that, but it doesn't have as much to do with speed as how challenging it is what you ski and how well you ski it, if that makes sense.
I see. Well, one thing is true, though. We cannot research your name and not finding the major big fall that you had a few years ago where you were training. I think you fell over 1,000 feet down the mountain, something crazy. Unbelievably, you were barely injured, nothing really major. But looking back at that time, when you see that footage, what comes to your mind?
Yeah, it sucked. Well, I guess that was an interesting, day. I think we all experience this in life, where sometimes days have a flow to them. things are happening easily. Maybe you're making all the green lights, or everyone's responding on time to your emails, or whatever it may be. Sometimes days have this flow, or sometimes they don't. Sometimes you're missing all the lights, or you're dropping and breaking, you know, your water glass or whatever. And, you know, just like that in the mountains, sometimes days have flow and you're getting a lot of shots. You're getting a lot done. Everyone's, you know, synchronized together and working well together. And other days, the clouds roll in, or you're about to ski something and then the camera battery dies, and we were just having one of those days where the flow was kind of off, and I felt like it was a mental struggle for me. So I decided that I was going to just ski something fun. It wasn't for the movie. It was in the shade. So usually shots that are in the shade don't make it. So this was just a run for me. And I thought I could kind of break out of my mental funk by just skiing something fun. And I wasn't going too fast. Like, I wasn't skiing crazy fast. It was pretty well within reason. And I picked that line because you're always thinking about, if I fall, where am I going to go, right? Where's gravity going to take me? And so I picked, that was a really low consequence line, right? The worst possible case scenario happened where I fell and tomahawked the whole thing, but I was fine, right? There was no cliffs below me or anything like that. So there wasn't much going through my head when I, once I started falling, except for that I was like, please stop, please stop, please stop. But I was just picking up speed. And so I tried to cover my head and neck with my arms because I was like tumbling through big ice chunks and I didn't want to smash my face on them. So about halfway through, I kind of tried to protect my face a little bit. And yeah, there wasn't much going through my head. Everything kind of slowed down, as you hear about.
No, that's just crazy when you see the end effect. Thank goodness nothing too bad happened there. Did you change anything, your approach or preparation after the fall? Or you just realize it's just, you know, just the nature of the business, you know?
Part of it is that. Part of it is that it is the nature of the business. And if you are, but it was... So at some point or another, we all experience a pretty gnarly fall. And I hadn't ever really had one. So some of it is the nature of the business. But I think my biggest takeaway was to not necessarily try and force your way through or push your way through if you're just feeling off, especially when it comes to stuff that's a little risky. And, you know, I was lucky on that. And part of it was because I knew that that line wasn't that dangerous. Well, relatively speaking. But yeah, to listen to ourselves and our gut instinct, like that's such a powerful tool in life and in the mountains. And my gut was just like not really having that great of a day. And it was kind of saying that it wasn't a great ski day for me. And I tried to push through. And so that was my big lesson, was to just sit back if things aren't flowing and just be okay with it.
How long after did you went up again?
Well, we had maybe a weather day or maybe two. So it was like probably 2 days later that I went out again.
I want to touch base on the concept of fear. What are you afraid of?
Water. I'm pretty afraid of water. Yeah, like the open ocean is pretty scary to me. It's a very unknown beast, or not beast, but force of nature, right? So water is probably my biggest fear, but I think... You know, I also fear the unknown and I fear change. The same sort of basic human fears that we all have, I guess.
It's not very uncommon to hear elite athletes talking about this being a moment, like a state of flow. And I'm sure that's what happens to you when you're coming down the mountain. But for those who has never experienced or doesn't know what it means, can you describe a little bit what it feels like to be in that state?
I've also experienced it in meditation, or sometimes driving. Sometimes driving is a meditation for me, where, yeah, like you said, you're quote unquote, you're in the zone, but it's a space where time slows down. And usually for me, it starts once I get right before we do our lines and the cameras are rolling, you know, they'll count you into your line, like 3, 2, 1, dropping. And then that's when you go. And so usually it starts maybe right then, or maybe a little after. Sometimes it takes me a couple turns, but it's an experience where, for me anyways, there isn't, you're not thinking about anything else. And usually you're not thinking about what you're doing, you're skiing. Maybe you're thinking about, okay, I need to make sure that I cut to the right super hard here so I make that cliff. But sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's just a complete void of anything. And time definitely seems slowed down. And there's not much going in or coming out. It's sort of just being really, really present in the experience, I guess. And the interesting thing about it is when you get to the bottom and you kind of snap out of it, it's really hard to remember what you did or what you were doing. Like, it's almost like you blacked out and somebody's like, whoa, how did that air feel? Like, you looked awesome. You're like, man, I actually don't remember much about my line. And so usually I find those moments where I'm really present. I don't have like a really specific, it's hard for me to like have a really good image recall.
You said driving is a form of meditation for you. What else do you do to kind of keep yourself calm or prepare before a big day?
Yeah, meditation is a really big one for me. I hear, and I've started hearing that a lot more in the mainstream lately, but a thing a lot of people think meditation has to be a certain way, like, oh, you have to have no thoughts or it has to be this thing and I can't do it. And I was that way at first too. I was like, I don't know if it's for me. But sometimes for me, all my morning routine is just sitting with myself and letting the thoughts or feelings pop up that are maybe buried beneath the surface if you're always staying super busy. So I like to just sit with myself and before these days when I go out, kind of sometimes I'll visualize a line that maybe, or a zone that I know we're going to and what it's going to feel like to ski it. Or sometimes I'll just let the fear pop up or the anxiety or the distractions and just kind of make note like, oh yeah, I got a lot going on in my brain today. Like I'm feeling kind of distracted. Okay, that's good to know. Or whatever. It's always different. But I really met that kind of just self-awareness really helps so that I know I have a baseline of where I'm at when I'm in the mountains, right? Some days you wake up, maybe you're a little sad about something or whatever. And just knowing where you're at before you go out in these stressful situations is really helpful for me. And it just helps get me more present and it gives me a chance to maybe get rid of some fears that I don't need or to just be like, you know what? That stuff that keeps coming up, I don't really care about it today, or I'm not that worried about it, or whatever. Sometimes it just allows you to put it in a different place or address it head on if you need to. I like to do, if I can, like a little bit of stretching or foam rolling or yoga. I like to pull different like oracle cards, or I don't have a tarot deck, but I've got like animal medicine cards or whatever. Sometimes it's just a card to give me like a theme to think about for the day. Those are my two main, I guess, anchoring things that I do every morning, especially before I go out.
And was that something that you had to apply, or at least kind of to teach yourself? Because I know you had a tear in your ACL a few years ago as well, and that's usually a major injury. A lot of people don't come back from that. During the rehab process, what was going through your mind? I mean, you just couldn't wait to go back to the mountains, or because I know people who is very driven, they can't stay still for long. They need to keep going and move forward. For how long were you down? And just tell us a little bit of the process, how you were able to, you know, get strong again and get back to it.
Yeah, it really gave me, that was my first major injury. It gave me an appreciation for anyone who's had a major injury or any health problems where you feel like you're not able to fully move around in the world or feel like yourself in the world. Because especially if you're an athletic person or just a person who uses your body a lot when it's taken away from you and you can't do your normal activities, you start to realize how much our identity is wrapped up in the things that we do. Even I didn't think that mine was, but it is, you know, our bodies are a big part of who we are and how we use them is a big part of who we are. And there's a huge feeling of questioning yourself and feeling trapped when you are injured like that. And so I took that as an opportunity it's just uncomfortable. And there's just no way to get through it except for to just keep moving forward. And it was a real practice of patience and just being okay with sitting with myself. It sounds pretty simple, but that it's really challenging. So I think all of us get through it differently. Some of us really focus on rehab, and that's kind of like our driving factor that gets us through. That was not it for me. I ended up spending a lot of time with friends and doing a bit more art and kind of taking a break from my professional and skiing life. But yeah, it's hard when a lot of even just your normal friends, they're like, oh, well, let's just go on the bike ride to the park. And you're like, I'm not cleared to bike ride yet. So I was out for, it felt like 6 months that I really wasn't able to do much. And then it was kind of 9 months until I could really start skiing again. So yeah, it was a bit of time to reflect on yourself and let some of your demons come out and address them. And that amount of time gave me a chance to sort of let some of my demons come up or the things I struggle with in life. And I sort of chose to take the whole experience as a spiritual growing opportunity. And everyone I've talked to that's been injured comes out of the experience and is like, oh, I'm so glad for the most part, I'm so glad that it happened, because a lot of times we get our biggest lessons and our biggest growths through our biggest challenges. And so we never ask for these things to happen to us, of course, but that's when we're asked to, you know, rise up and show up and grow. So I just was like, okay, I understand that's what I have to do right now, and it sucks, but I sort of took time away from skiing. But it did definitely help light a fire under my butt to make me want to go out and work hard and ski really well again. So I think it helped with my ski career in that way.
Also, thing that I always notice is that it's a big business behind it. There's big companies. I'm sure it's very costly to get a helicopter and have a crew to do all the film and the production level as well. Is that a part of the business that you are involved? Are you interested with the conversation with the sponsors, or you prefer just to focus on skiing and have other people handling the details?
Maybe I would like if other people would do it for me, but thus far I've done everything. Yeah, it is very much a business for me. Like, it's my job. So working with all my sponsors and my travel schedule and managing my finances and marketing and social media and just the whole package of what it is to have your own business and manage your goals and relationships, like, that's all been on me so far. And I've really enjoyed it. I really like working with sponsors and sort of learning how the industry works and building those personal relationships. So yeah, I've very much been kind of my own, I guess, boss, which I like. I like being able to set my own schedule, but sometimes the workload is a lot and I end up not spending as much time like training or being outside as I want to, because I'm at the computer more than I'd like, but it's all part of it and I enjoy it. I have an agent now, so that will make the contract negotiations easier with sponsors, because that's the most challenging part when you have an athlete manager that you really like and you've got good rapport with, but then it comes time to renegotiate your next contract and you kind of have to, like, you know, go head to head a little bit and that around finances, and that's always tough.
All that jazz.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you have been very successful in your career with the sponsors and everything else. For this new generation, how hard is for them to get a sponsorship or, you know, to break it through? Has it got any easier?
I'm not sure. It's changing a lot with social media. Social media is kind of, in a big way, at least for big mountain skiing and I'm sure other sports too, it's changed the way that it has changed what sponsors want from their athletes. So when I signed all my contracts, pretty much it was before social media existed. So what was expected of me was to be as good of an athlete as possible and have, you know, these standout film segments. And now it's really important that for companies that athletes post online and that they do a good job of conveying to the public like an interesting lifestyle. And what's interesting about that is a lot of it can sort of be faked. Like a photo can, you can be not as good of an athlete and still look really good on social media or in a photo and be really good at telling a story and marketing yourself. And nowadays that's really, really valuable to companies because the return, you know, it's easy for them to look at someone with a $100,000 following and want to sign them instead of maybe someone who's a bit better of a skier, but only has 6,000 followers, you know? So they're drawn, companies are drawn to people who maybe aren't as, and not necessarily, but maybe aren't as good at the sport, but better at an all-around package than people who are just good at the sport, but not as good about social media.
How do you see your own personal brand in the next, in the future? As you mentioned, you are your own business, your own boss.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about that recently. And sometimes we want all the answers right now. And I definitely want all the answers right now. And so I've been struggling with where to set my next long-term goal and how specific I should be about it. But what's really important to me is the environment and making a difference in humanity, giving making people feel better about themselves and the world and life, and just giving back to nature because it's given me everything and I love being outside so much. So I want my brand, my voice, and my business to work along those lines. And I have an incredible platform that I've built with my sponsors, and I don't have a huge social media following, but it's something. I want to have a project that works with skiing and with these passions of the outdoors that isn't just filming a ski segment for these ski movie companies like TGR, or maybe it is using their platforms, but something that's much more environmentally minded or more of a humanitarian project. And I don't know like what that's going to look like yet. And I want to know, but I'm sort of just trying to put the intention out there and follow different leads as they come up. But that's really where I want my brand to be going.
How important is for you to be a role model for young girls? Or is something that you don't really think about it? You just want to enjoy yourself, have a good time, and live your life? Not really much worried about, you know, being a role model.
Well, I really want to, one of my favorite sayings or mantras is treat others the way you want to be treated. And I find like with social media, the only way that I can post is if I'm just being me and being authentic. And as a person, I'm really driven to like be the best human that I can be. And so I don't like think of myself as a role model. I'm not out there like, oh, I really hope other girls can see this message or get this from what I'm saying. I sort of just want to be that type of human, period. And I hope that what I share resonates with people and that they find something in there that is useful for them. But I've never thought of myself like, oh, I'm so enlightened and you should learn from my example or whatever. I don't know. It's funny to think of me being in like a leadership or role model role. But it's super important to me to just be that kind of person all the time. And so I hope it shows through social media or just my being in general. But it's not something that I think about like, oh, I want to provide this for people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does. How many more years do you think you still be like eager to do big mountain skiing?
I'm not sure. I don't think that for too many, it's hard to say. Part of me definitely gets tired. Like all of us, when we're standing on top of our lines, if it's a really big line or a really scary day, all of us are scared. It's just part of it. It's the nerves that come with having cameras on, and it's a part of the sport. Some lines are easier than others, but the challenging ones are scary. And it takes a lot to sort of always be managing your fear and meditating and breathing and always being present. And I've enjoyed the challenge. But yeah, I think there will be a time when I'm like, my self-preservation instinct, maybe being a female, kicks in, is like, okay, enough of that. But not to say that I am not acting in ways that are good for self-preservation. I feel like risk management is the most important thing to me. But I think there will come a time here, maybe in the next 5 years or something, where I want to not be skiing as big of stuff. But It's tough to say. I do know that as far as big mountain skiing goes, I'd really love to connect skiing, like I said, with a purpose that helps, that is more specific to helping people and helping the planet or helping climate change more than what I'm doing right now. And I feel that urge to be doing more purposeful work as something that I really need to refine, like within the year.
Do you ski all year long, or usually you try to take a couple breaks between competitions or filming?
I definitely like to take breaks. I skied in the summers for like 15 or well, maybe 12 years in a row. And it wasn't all summer, but some of them were good chunks. Like this summer, I'm going to Argentina for almost a month. But I really enjoy taking breaks and stepping away. It makes me love the sport more. I would get burnt out if I skied all the time, but some people do.
Where in Argentina? Bariloche?
Yep.
I spent a little bit of time there back in the day.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
The first time?
No, it's my second time, but the first time I was there, it was the first time that I ever traveled internationally, and I was 12 and I was there for a month, and that was a really cool experience, and that was kind of what opened the door to international travel, so I'm really excited to go back now.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there. Now, usually I ask all the guests to recommend one book. Do you have one in mind?
Yeah, I would say the Four Agreements is a book that I really love that resonates a lot with me. Have you heard of it?
Yes, I have.
That's, if I had to recommend one, that would be it.
Are you taking anyone to Argentina with you?
I'm going with a group of, it's actually, this trip is going to be all women skiers, so I'm pretty excited about that. And it's for upcoming movie that's coming out this fall that Matchstick Productions is releasing called All In.
Angel, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And again, I truly believe what you do is just unbelievably crazy, but it's amazing. That being said, do me a big favor and tell everybody who's listening how they can keep up with you and follow you on social media and your website.
Yeah, well, if you're looking to my website is quite outdated. but I would say the best way to find out more about me would be, yeah, via my social media channels. And my Instagram is just Angel Collinson, and same with my Facebook. So that's probably the easiest way to find me. And yeah, I've really enjoyed chatting, and thank you for the opportunity.
Ladies and gentlemen, Angel Collison. Hey everyone, make sure to like, comment, and let us know what you think. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.